Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. It's Wednesday. We're still doing it over here at your mom's house. I am your host, Ryan Sickler. You can find me on all social media at Ryan Sickler. My website is RyanSickler.com. My album, Get a Hold of Yourself, available. Telling y'all every week, iTunes, Apple Music, Amazon, Google Play. Make those Spotify channels. If anybody's even using Pandora, make those Pandora channels. It really helps. Go listen to it on Sirius. I appreciate all the five-star reviews you guys are throwing up on iTunes. That also helps, so thank you very much. And again, thank you. Thank you for the positive reviews. Thank you for the love to the show. I'm not going anywhere. We're going to keep on doing this, and we'll be in soon over at your mom's house studio. Excuse me, their studio, Jeans. I'm not sure what the one I'm called is going to be, and we'll find out. And I'll let you know, and we'll be posting it and everything when the Crab Feast apps are up on their own site, which is coming soon as well. There is no more double show on this feed. It is now just the Honeydew. And Honeydew info, the website is thehoneydewpodcast.com. You can email me at honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show on social media on Facebook. The Honeydew Podcast is the official fan page. And on Twitter, at honeydewpod. This week, my guest is an old friend, a great comedian, and a Crab Feast favorite. Just a great dude. I'm stoked to have him on this week. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Carl DeGregorio,
y'all. What's going on,
welcome
honey,
to the Honeydew.
Thanks,
Carl,
man. I'm excited. I'm more than excited. I'm
if there's
thrilled.
Anyone I know that's right for the Honeydew, it is certainly you, my friend.
Well, I am pleased to be right and right here with you. So thanks, man. This
well,
is great.
You know how we do it. We're keeping it super comfy. And first, before we get into anything, please plug and promote anything you want, Carl D. Your social media, your book on Amazon,
yes,
Drama
the Drama King.
King,
available on Amazon. You could also shout at me.
It's published.
It is. I am published. And It had some subtitles. I was going to call it, obviously, the Drama King stuck, but I was going to call Carl D. Get Some because it's got a lot of that in it. But no, it's
you did the right thing.
Yeah, I think I did. I think I did. You can catch me on, this is funny because of, I'm on all social media as I, Carl D. Gregorio.
And do I know why?
Just because somebody had my name and
who the fuck else
I know.
Is Carl D. Gregorio?
I know. Who would pick that catchy ass thing? So yeah, I, Carl DeGregorio, on all social media, and my website where you can get at me is I have a million different domains feeding into it, but the latest one I'm kind of happy with is DeGregorgeous.com.
DeGregorgeous, nah, dude. What's the main site?
CarlDeGregorio.com.
But what other ones do you have?
DramaKingCarl.com. You could also get there via CarlDoesIt.com. That all feeds because I've had so many bad rebrands and I've given up and just keep buying domains.
Bunch of .coms to just push to one site.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
All right, well, that sounds like you can get to Carl D anywhere, everybody.
Yeah, trying.
Well, again, thank you for being here. You know, when I started doing this, I wanted to talk to you. I definitely wanted to have you on because we've been friends for a long time. We've done comedy together a long time. And, of course, you've had some fantastic... If you haven't heard any of Carl's episodes on the Crab Feast, you got to go. They're must-listens, Hall of Fame eps. But you, I know... We never really talked about it so much, and this is what I'd like to start talking to you about today. You are one of how many?
I'm the youngest of four.
Four.
Yeah.
But when you say you're the youngest, what is the age difference between you and your... is it all brothers?
It's two brothers and a sister.
So who's oldest?
Barry is 13 years older.
And then...
Steve and Karen. I hope they don't mind I dropped their actual names.
Well, but, I mean, it's probably in the book.
They
could
probably look it up, yeah.
13 years...
11 and 10, yeah.
So your next closest sibling is 10 years from you.
Uh-huh.
So are you an oops baby? Or
I mean, I jokingly call myself a love child or a happy accident. And I'm pretty sure it was a more of an accident or a mistake, you know. But I guess what happened is they overdid it with affection and broke a lot of maybe the pathologies.
What month are you born in?
July.
Have you timed that back?
I haven't. You know,
months?
I'm just bad with numbers. And
what is that, November?
Yeah, so when was I conceived is what you're trying to
figure
out? It
might have been like a Halloween party, bud. They might have just got buck wild on Halloween. Yeah,
just like Dick Cavett. Dick Cavett and Suzanne Plachette or some shit like that, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I've never really made that. I mean, a lot of people laugh and they joke, and my girlfriend always says, you know, that means that they were, you know, they were still into each other, you know, long into their marriage.
And well after their third kid.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it sounded like it was tough because back in the day, you know, there wasn't as I don't know, maybe there was for rich people, but there just wasn't like industries for child care. So my mom talks about like three kids in about 3 years and just being overwhelmed.
You and I were just talking about this cuz I'm telling you about my daughter in preschool from 2. And I just remember preschool when we were kids being 4 years old,
yep.
And then you went to you did like 1 year of preschool, and then you went kindergarten.
Right,
I don't remember.
Yeah, so you were home for many years. It seems like I'm sure for the folks it must have been, you know. And then she had three, and then there was this 10 year hiatus
where they think they're out of the woods,
and then homie pops
that
up,
motherfucking Halloween party ruined everything.
Yeah, right.
So being the youngest, you've said some things to me before too, because everybody else at that point is as they're you know gone 18, you're only 8.
The one sort of math I figured out was that my brother Barrett, the oldest brother, he like left the house when I was 5 years old. So in terms of feeling like I had siblings, there was just one after the other would go away to college, and you know that was I guess early. It was sad to be dragged to these colleges, and you know, we went in the car together, and then we came back, and it was just me and the folks. And we did that like 3 times.
Like the family just kept getting smaller.
And, you know, you can't, I mean, we're all.
Carl, you're going to be able to sit up front in a couple more
years. Yeah, pretty soon. It's all your shotgun soon. But I guess at some point you couldn't put it together. So I probably internalized it, took it personally, and just missed having all that attention.
So yeah, it's interesting. So you have three siblings that you'd never roughhouse with or play.
No.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're not
like, what are they going to beat up
on
an infant?
Right, yeah, playing games. But I mean, the fact that those three are, they had that with each other.
Yeah.
It sounds like, and then
Think psychologically speaking, I was probably raised like an only child. I felt like an only child. I didn't have to share shit. It was a whole decade later, so like the whole. The society changed enough that it was different, and so I'm like self. I mean, I joke all my girlfriends. I would say like I need constant attention. I also need to be left the fuck alone.
Yeah.
At the same time, because it's like
codependent.
Yeah, I didn't have to share a fucking bathroom. Hand me down clothes would have been. I really would have looked like Starsky and Hutch. Like they would have been bell bottoms and you know Earth shoes and shit.
Right,
and
yeah.
It just would. I couldn't even inherit clothes and. You know, I'm actually reading this book, the Michelle McNamara book about the Golden Gate Killer, and she had a similar age disparity. And then she said that her life was saved when neighbors across the street moved in and they had twin girls at the same age.
Boom.
You know, and I was lucky that there were kids across the street, and those were, you know, they were my sort of surrogate siblings. And friends became really important. And my dad had a weird schedule, so.
What did he do?
He was a newspaper writer. He worked for the New York Times, sports. He edited. He did he worked the slot, what they call, which is like cramming every article into the page. And then he worked Moonlit, like as Information Please Almanac, and he wrote a book. And so he was always in the city.
So authors in your blood.
Yeah, man. I think so. I mean, I'm sure that's part of what, you know, drove me, but. You know, he had a weird schedule, so he'd be out of the house when I got up for school, or he'd be in bed, because like in sports, the deadline is 11 p.m., so he's getting home from the city at midnight, so it felt like at certain times, like I was like raised by a single mom in a way, you know, mm-hmm. But then I had those friends across the street. They had younger parents. They did more shit. You know, I got the horseback ride. I was blessed to have that kind of extension, you know.
So how old are your parents at when you're five?
I guess they're in their 40s, right? Like, they had me... I got to do the math on this shit.
But. Yeah, I want to know, because I'm 45. My daughter's four. 40 yeah. when we got pregnant, 41
Yeah, I guess my dad was 42. I guess, I think I did do that for the sake of the book. I figured it out that my dad was 42, 43 when he had
when he had you.
And my mom was 37, so something like that. Okay. So then by five, they're both in their 40s, you know. So I think, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think I was more... that was a more unique scenario than it is today, because I think people put it off because of fertility, technology, and our me
money, our wanting me to be financially settled, right, and you never have enough money.
Right.
I mean, unless you're, you know, well off, it just shit just comes up.
That's yeah.
You know, I learned that too. Like, you could put away $200,000 and then
it'll be
some bullshit happens and poof, that could be gone. So you never have enough.
But just, you don't feel like... you don't feel like a old dad around your kids.
Fuck,
parents,
I'm running through jungle gyms.
Yeah,
I go
yeah.
to, I take her to these play places, and I had to buy knee pads because at my first day I was climbing through all these tunnels. My knees were killing me.
Oh.
Now I got knee pads. You should see me shoot through these motherfuckers.
Do you, get those fucking skate park ones? With the
no,
plastic
not
on
the hard ones. No, they don't let you in those. I was going to try.
Oh, because you could hurt somebody?
Yeah, I got the cushions, and they can snag and rip and shit.
You're like Patrick Ewing
I
out
shoot
there
right
on
through.
The fucking...
I shoot right through. I'm passing kids in there. I will say this, though, my one fear, because it's, you know, it's not built for people my size, so it's tight. And I'm always worried about an earthquake when I'm in one of those tunnels.
You
like,
think
I'm
a, about that?
Every time, like, get to the bottom, get to the bottom. That's what I think. Move, kids! Move, kids! Like, if they're all down there, like, go! Go!
You're putting fear into the little kids.
I can't even help it in those situations.
Wow, that's an acute... You're
but
like
no,
an
feel,
animal.
I don't feel like an old dad. And you know, we do the play date thing, too. But I know from talking to you over the years, you just have always said you were that kid that grew up around all the adults.
Yeah, I mean,
like
that,
you were being taken yeah, places, and
it sucked because, and you know, like I said, I'm trying not to in my development and trying to self help and do you know, maintenance on things. Like, you can literally flip a narrative in your head on a dime if you decide to, right? So you can say, that sucked. I was around a bunch of old people all the time. Man, it would have been cool to have my brothers on the same basketball team to beat up, you know, whatever those things are, it would have been great. But, you know, now I have to sort of see it as it made me the sort of egghead, big brain sort of the trivia stuff that I'm really kind of obsessed with. It gave me that. But, I guess the only issue was maybe a little loneliness because I didn't have a pack of siblings, you know what I mean? I mean, you had a twin, right?
From day fucking one, I had one.
And I don't know
from
what that dynamic
first second.
Is. You know, it's
4 minutes.
Yeah.
I talk about. I like to think, I joke about me being older.
Right.
And that I was conceived first, that I just shoved him out so I could get 4 fucking minutes of
solitude.
Peace and quiet.
Yeah,
my
yeah,
whole
yeah.
life. He's been there every time.
Wow.
That's it.
Was there trauma when you separated to move to another coast? Like, did you have an emotional parting or anything like that?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I cried all the way to Tennessee, bro.
Oh, not that's
for
beautiful.
Real.
Yeah,
oh,
fuck yeah.
I mean, I was leaving everyone and everything
right,
I
right.
knew
yeah.
to go someplace where I had no shit.
Right.
Out of people. I didn't know about anything. I didn't know about the business. I still don't
right.
know shit.
Right. Yeah, but and you also gave up on that fucking... That twin telepathy shit that everybody
yeah,
makes jokes about.
We never
about.
Had that. We sound alike. I mean, I'm going to do an episode with him. I told him he has to do an episode with me because I want to talk to him about his memories of the shit I remember.
Right.
You know, we all remember
yeah,
things
yeah,
differently.
100%.
There's something to it where it's like, well, do you remember this? Because I've had friends who've already listened and called me up and said, man, do you remember when you did this or we did this? And I'm like, no, I don't. You know, I forget a lot of that
that's,
shit.
That's happening. And that you can, the cool thing is sometimes you can be right. And when you're wrong, it freaks you out because you've identified with this either hardship or accomplishment and you're fucking way off on it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And your brother can fill in some of those blanks
right.
or at least the
but
different
we sound
perspective.
A lot alike. I told him I would like to see.
If you could get away on the phone with the...
We always did. There wasn't a relative, only our parents. There wasn't, well, I should say my dad. There wasn't a relative who could call the house and figure out who they were talking to.
Oh, that's that fucking accent exists in another human being.
I mean, to a T, the cadence, the everything.
Well, that's
he's a little more slower and like
because he stayed in the fucking
Baltimore. But there were girls that would call, and I'm like, I don't want to talk to her. Talk to her, and he would talk to her, and I'd be playing video games with the kids in the neighborhood, my brothers and shit. Unlike you,
yeah.
And he would hit me. He'd be like, "You're going to the movies on Friday. You're going to see Police Academy." I'm like, "You're a fucking dick, dude."
Oh, he would set you up for shitty dates.
Set me out to go on dates. Like he was me.
What if he's like, Ryan, I have a deep connection with you that I've never had with another 14-year-old girl in my life. Like setting you up for like
totally
breaking her heart and shit. That's what when you farm that shit out, they could jam you up big time.
So what happens? How do you develop? How do you like you probably learn to start talking to adults quicker
you
than
you do. I mean, I was
kids.
My friends used to fucking want to kill me because you know when you're starting drinking and you go out partying and in the suburbs, you kind of like
try and get charcuterie and shit. Yeah, and yeah. Just like, we want some Miller Lite, motherfucker.
We're fucking the signal, the best winter jacket wasn't how good it looked. It's like how many beers it could carry.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So like, and that, my brother did have one crazy ass down jacket that kind of, I guess, is always in stock because it's a big bubble
jacket. Get my smoking jacket.
What? Exactly.
My smoking jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean your winter jacket? No, my smoking jacket.
No, for when we go retire to the library, right? And drink cognac.
Yeah,
and
I was
shit.
About to say. Hey, get my cognac.
No, but like, so I would be I'd always be the kid who would like converse with the adults, and my buddies would be like, "Can we get the fuck out of here? Stop being nice to my parents." And I was just chatty,
I
related
you got used
better.
To it. Yeah, right. You're relating more to that.
And,
age.
And sometimes, like you know, I don't know if this is true, but like until I found some really close friends, most of the, like I would kick it with some like neighborhood kids or just kids on teams, and I'd be like, these kids are fucking like morons, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I don't relate. And so, and I even
never seen
a I have a theory. Jesus, this is a total conjecture, but like I had a girlfriend, the first big one, and I think she kind of broke up me because I was too acceptable to her mom, because I would,
oh yeah,
like I'd knock on the door and I'd be like, I'd say you know, is she home? And she'd be like, no, she'll be here in a minute. And I'd sit in the kitchen and have like cookies and shit and just kick it with her mom.
That was me too. I would do that with the moms.
I always thought that it was like a way to, you know, get after the mom or whatever. But
I just always looked at it like I never really had that mom. So it was cool to sit and talk to some moms.
Yeah. That's a nice
because they'd always be moms. They'd be like, do you want a sandwich?
Oh, wow. Yeah, you would need that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
See, I'm with you on that because it was very hard for me to relate in both worlds. By the time I was 16, my father's dead.
Wow.
My mom's left. I had gone through more than most of my friends' parents had at that age. And they didn't even know how to talk to me. You know, I could see that they were uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
They made every attempt to be an adult, but they didn't. There was no hindsight. There was no, you know, this or this.
Yeah.
There was no, and then on the other flip side is, these kids haven't. I'm talking to their parents. They don't know what the fuck I'm going through, so they can't relate. So that's why.
Wow. Yeah.
My family, my cousins, the good ones that I'm really tight with, my brothers, that we were so close because we were the only ones that could relate to what we were going through and dealing with. So that's when I started like really meeting the friends, like, oh, your dad's bounced, or you know, you're adopted, uh-huh, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And these honeydews all over the place.
Right.
And that's why I've always had that like. My Achilles heel is always feeling for the fucking
downtrodden,
the bad guy, the underdog, and the bad guy. So sometimes they treat you like shit and flip on you. And you're like,
right.
Well, of course you did. You're
well. Do you think that you had a maturity that was born out of that trauma, versus like my maturity was more out of like getting data or data, whichever the fuck it is,
data,
getting data thrown at you.
I thought you were about to say
from
adults, something.
Like I was out of step maybe with my peers because of my odd background, or at least an age disparity. And you were maybe at odds with your peers because of the things you'd suffered. You know what I mean? And that's a different kind of maturity. Because I would say as I got older, I thought I was mature, but I also probably didn't handle traumas or setbacks as well as I should have, because I was also a spoiled baby of the family. And just because I was verbal, you know, that's a big
right.
Growing up and you get tested and all that shit. Sometimes you get what's the word? Like you get
represented,
mislabeled, or like being verbal doesn't necessarily mean you have any fucking coping skills. You know what I mean? Being an I was like a classic extrovert introvert. And so, you know, being able to do a presentation doesn't mean everything's hunky dory and that you're not, you know, or you're a positive attention seeker. You know, they say the bad kids are, they're just looking for attention, right?
Yeah.
But I was looking for positive attention. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. But that, you know, you really came through glowingly, I would say, just in general.
Well, look, man, thank you. And to answer your question, I feel like all of that trauma, it made me smarter in a way. Street smart.
Yeah.
I'm able to read people. Made me adapt, but I didn't have the financial education.
Yeah. You know,
for a long time, I just saved money or spent money. I mean, just the last couple of years, I started just saving. Yeah, you know, I got my daughter and life insurance, all that. You got to.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We didn't have any of that. My dad didn't even have a will, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
well, he also probably didn't think he was going.
No,
right?
He didn't think he was dropping at 42. So there's no life insurance. There's no any of that. That might have come through like work or something like that. I don't know. But again, a lot of that was taken. So,
And I guess I got all that was sort of paved out for me. And my thing was, I worried about shit, constantly worried about shit, everything. And
you still do.
I still do. I'm maybe improving. I'm trying to, but like, it was really unnecessary. I was well taken care of.
Like, what do you mean? You'd worry about what sort of thing? Like trivial things?
Yeah,
I
had like a, I literally
college
had
college. How the,
yeah, every life change was going to be a, like, I literally thought I wasn't going to get into college, period. Not just not get into the one I wanted.
Why? Grades?
Just
or?
The panic of like, yeah, stacking up, measuring up. And unfortunately, the thing that fucked me up a little bit was when I was really alert as a little kid, not as a baby, but my brother and sister were in high school and they were 70s high school. Like, so like to me, they lived in Dazed and Confused.
Right.
That was that shit. That was a nostalgic movie for me only because through my eyes, that's how dope high school must have been in the city. Because you could, I think they were older.
They're all going in a roller rink. Your mom's like, get in the car, Carl.
Or they could drink at 18. So right. to pass a fake ID at 16, you could probably, you know, none of these. And they were active and they did shit and it just looked, and then by the time I got to high school, I'm like, this is it. You know what I mean? So I always had these expectations and that fucks your whole shit up, you know? And then a couple of expectations with worry and, you know, it's something I had to fucking deal with it. But then that, you know, man, it's so lame and it's so, I don't know what, like Judy Blume or whatever the fuck, but like I kept journals and it.
Why do you think that's lame?
Well, only because, you know, you grow up in New Jersey where you're supposed to punch people out and throw rocks and shit like that. And then I took it upon myself. Like, I didn't have to be assigned by a teacher to keep
what age did you start?
I think 14, 13. And I have them all. And
that's what my next question.
Yeah. And the beauty of that and just
you,
the.
And then what are you journaling about? Your day? Are you writing poetry? What are you doing there?
The sad part is they're probably as similar.
Chapter 6 is my haikus.
I tried to dabble. I tried to dabble in poetry.
Made my own Sudoku puzzles in chapter 9.
It's, you know, it's not even keeping track of shit either. It was literally, most of the time it was pep talks. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Pep talks and then anxiety about approaching college. And then that's sort of when something changed me because.
So wait.
A whole book about I'm never getting into college, like wasting all.
A book?
Like a whole like notebook of writing to myself, what the fuck am I going to do? And then you turn 60 pages ahead and you're like, I'm at my first fucking day at school. And so
school, by the way, is not just school. It's Carnegie Mellon,
yeah.
Which is a.
So I did okay and I got into a
university.
Good school and I made, you know, I used the image of the back of the car, right? You know, the stickers, the college stickers. My brothers and sisters put some heavy stickers on that fucking car window and I'm. Fucking, I didn't know I was gonna be able to even put a decent
like
one up.
Gas, grass, gas, or ass. Everybody rides for free. You're like, let's put a Carnegie Mellon over there. Shit's changing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I didn't. I was worried about it. On the eighth day, God created Springsteen was a bumper sticker and shit. No, but you know those decals from good colleges, and I just was freaked that I wasn't gonna be able to measure up.
So hold on, you're writing pep talks to yourself. So where does that come from?
Some
something
people
you must wanted to do.
Yeah.
So there is a part of you that's you're battling yourself.
Yes, 100%.
There's a part of you that's, that knows. Hey, yes. We're good. We're all right. We can do this.
I think so.
Buck up, man up, and let's go fucking do this.
And I think I have, this is crazy for people who know me, who work with me or see me, but I think I have a sunny disposition, to be honest.
I would say you do.
Thank you for not leaving me hanging. But when I lose my shit, that connotes negative thoughts, or stress makes you different than you are. Anxiety, like, it's crazy what it does. It takes away your...
tells me about imprinting.
Yeah.
I learned about this with the geese. I feel like I learned about this. Imp was...
when they fly in a flock?
Yes, they just know.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, and it's just, it's an imprint. So... how you learn to argue when you're a kid. Like, you'll see some people say, like, you're a fucking asshole. It's like, you don't need to say that there. That's something that you're used to. It's a
they
habit.
Strike out. They got bad. How they resolve it. Yeah.
The best you can do is to acknowledge and recognize what your pattern is.
Right.
And then over the course of your life, try to minimize those incidents so that you're not doing that all the time. But, I mean... you ain't ever getting rid of it. It's who you are.
No, and I.
It's now that battle and that control and that you know, yin and yang, the balance you have to find, and hopefully the positive outweighs the negative.
Yeah. Well, my therapist gave me a book, and I'm working through it. And I, you know, these books were books you'd shun at the bookstore, or you know, I guess it's just an ego thing, or feeling like I'm fucking up. Like I would never have read these books before, but. This one says, and I don't know if it's, I agree, but it's about like how you self-talk, your inner monologue, that if it's negative self-talk and it's called the critic in your brain, which I know I have, because I used to do bits on stage where my inner voice sounded like Judge Judy yelling at the guy who didn't have his fucking paperwork in order and shit. Yeah. And I'm like, that's exactly what he's like when I'm trying to talk to a girl and Judge Judy's screaming in my ear. But the book or a lot of therapists say that that's more damaging than any trauma could be. So theoretically, you could get. Oh. And when I read that, I was like, wow, that it's more debilitating to have a critical self negative self monologue or self talk, because you can get you're going to take a beating with a trauma. You're going to mourn. You're going to grieve. And then one day, if you're lucky, you'll get over it. And then if you already have a good self talk, then you'll be still better off than the person who may have less traumas, but just can't see the world half full, I guess, you know? And so that's, I guess, been my battle. And I guess the journal was always me trying to be in the positive space or prayer. It might've been a form of prayer, you know?
I hear you.
Like, who are you talking to when you're, who do you want to read? You know, there's a narcissistic tendency, like someday people will read these.
Oh, but, see, I didn't realize that was an element of
no. Other days you're like, nobody needs to ever fucking
see
these.
I hope
no
one ever sees.
Yeah, this. And I think that's so. That I always battled that, and so that they're really just self. What they're like self care tools in my mind, maybe.
But the actual physical exercise of journaling, and writing and thinking, it takes a lot of time, and especially to go through a full pad of just about one topic. So I'm saying you're putting more time into the positive and the thinking about it just by the nature of that being, you know, opening a notepad, writing.
Yeah, and I like, versus I like just the
these
pens,
random
the
thoughts.
Pen and paper,
right.
And all that stuff was
probably
soothing.
Got into the pens.
Yeah, and, yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely a total, I'm a total pen fetishist, and I like paper, and I still like.
I still love to write on paper.
I like the legal pads. I got these.
People are like, why are you wasting paper? I'm like, I just fucking like the one.
Yeah, you got to make contact with it, you know?
Same thing. Bare feet on the grass. Like,
oh, yeah.
You don't think about that. Somebody said that to me about 90% of the time, maybe even more, we're not connected to the earth, meaning we have shoes on.
Oh,
flip-flops,
right.
Or we're walking on concrete. Like, think about the last time or how often you walk on a beach or barefoot on grass or something.
Yeah,
so
no,
now anytime
I
think about that.
Yeah. I hate sand.
I go back home and I'm like taking my fucking shoes
off
and walking all around this grass in the backyard.
That's got to be therapeutic. It's got to be something. And, you know, you
it's
can
just being connected and literally grounded. And you know, I think that probably helped you to sit and journal like that. Not only because it's positive, but again, you're spending more time with that exercise than these rapid fire negative thoughts are coming through and eating at you through the day.
I had my therapist, like, he at one point he told me, you need to fucking stop complaining, which is
to him. He said that to me.
But no, he said that to me. And my brother, who's a, you know, he's a doctor, and he's like, that's a good therapist. The therapist doesn't let you get away with bullshit. And he said, well, what were you talking about? And I said, I was telling a story about how I was in high school, and it was, I wasn't bragging. I mean, I guess I'm relaying the story, but I was talking to a therapist. You can't tell anybody this story. It's in the book, The Drama King, available on Amazon. But the gist of the story was, I was again hanging out with older people. They were like in their early 20s and they're in college. And
what are you, 14, 15?
15, 16, and they were into theater, and they brought me into, like, the city, and we'd go see plays at NYU. And so I'd sneak beers at places on the Lower East Side. I was always hanging out with them and just able to keep up. And I had a date, and she was, you know, like, she was on a cheerleading team. She was a captain, and I had a date, and my buddy said, we're going to go in the city. We're going to see a play, but I got to stop at my dad's work before we go into the city. And his dad's work is a, I won't describe it in detail, that would be low, but it was like a titty bar
strip club
in the Meadowlands. And
in the stadium?
Near the Meadowlands, okay. in that area. And so I'm in there with this hot, and I'm a sophomore, she's a senior, so like I'm pulling that. And I'm in a strip bar. I'm having a beer underage. There's chicks with tassels and a hot girl, and I'm on my way, and I'm like, and my, that's when my therapist interrupted me and said, you need to fucking see your whole life like differently. You got to stop complaining, because I was like,
not hearing a complaint though. What was the complaint?
I was telling that story to say, I guess there wasn't a complaint. I was just, I don't know why I was on the topic, but I forgot about that story, meaning that I sometimes tell a story that my childhood was bleak, or I was lonely, or all these sort of self-pitying shits, and none of this was true. It's just the way I saw it, you know? And then if you relay these facts to somebody, you mean to tell me you were in the block, and you tell some kid a story who from Iowa or something, not to disparage Iowa, but like he might not have had that experience at a young age, and all the externals were telling me winning, not losing, and I was telling myself a losing hand, you know what I mean? And so he was telling me, like, yeah, stop fucking, he wasn't, you know, he's being therapeutic and whatever, but
professional,
he was just, you know, encouraging me to always see, you know, with all, I guess, the blessings or whatever the hell it might have been. But I had a hard time with it for a long time, you know.
So how do you cope with that sort of thing? Like, you're in college now.
Yeah.
Are you, do you stay close to your parents at that time? Are you close to any of your siblings now that you're 18, 19? Are you reconnecting?
We got closer.
Or actually connecting?
Yeah, I mean, we were, you know, they were living their own lives. My sister went to Peru for 3 years of missionary work. So, like, she was kind of out of the picture for like 13 to 17, 16. So, that was a weird thing. I remember, you know, my brother was working, and then he got into medical school. And then, you know, everybody was, so they're in their late 20s, and I'm, you know, just getting started. So we were tight knit, you know, always home for the holiday. But there were Christmases where we weren't all together just because of circumstances, and I was always there. And then, you know, the thing is, like, the beauty of where I went to school is, like, it becomes so fucking all encompassing. It was so, like, intense amount of work. And then because you're doing plays and productions, and it's really like highfalutin. Like, my dad, he kept a streak of never missing me doing a play, starting with CMU, I guess, because he missed all my basketball games, he missed all my baseball games, not because he was absentee, it's just that he was in New York at the paper all the time,
seeing all your brothers and shit.
Yeah, he might have.
He's like, I'm tired.
Well, you know, and his days off, like, he had fucked up days off. Like, he had Thursday, Friday off, which was like, two of those are school days. And eventually, I think he got Friday, Saturdays off. But he was never, you know, so there was all these sort of normal family things that we didn't do, at least as a parental unit. So he, you know, he would make trips, like drive eight hours after work from the paper, come see a play, come crash with me. And
he
go
would drive
back
to Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
He'd drive, wow. Yeah. All right.
And he was cool. And then by then, he's in his 60s.
Yeah.
And like, he made an, that's when you really start to see how lucky you are. How, like, he was a cool cat, and he would kick it with, you know, then you start showing, there was that weird period where you, like, drop me off here, mom.
Yeah.
You go through that fucking, come on, you know, like, I just want to go to the mall. Yeah. Like, he just don't want to be around him.
We're meeting at Joy and Fabrics. Just stopping off over here, goddamn.
Sofro Fabrics was the one we had. But so then you start showing them off, because then, like, how you individuate, I think is the word they use. You individuate, and then in college, and then you got to sort of, like, you show off where you came from. And, you know, and he made an appearance.
All I have to show was pictures.
What? Oh, yeah. I'm like rubbing it in. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. I'm fucking lucky then, right? I got to consider that. And so, yeah, and he was a sports writer and a big Joe DiMaggio. So everything was about, like, streaks and achievement. And I think that put a lot of pressure on me, because, you know, I scored 20 points in a bitty basketball game. And he didn't see it, but I came home and I told him. He's like, what would you score? And I said, 20 points. He's like, you're the next Larry Bird. And I'm like, like, it was just, yeah, always go to the top.
The sports guy.
Yeah. Though. And so, you know, then when I blew out my small patellas, they betrayed me. My, you know, I took a blow to the ego. Not even the ego. I took a blow to my future. Like, I'm fucking up because I can't play basketball, you know. And, but, you know, he put a sports analogy on a lot of stuff, which is helpful, but also can be, the arts don't have those straight lines, you know, and so it would be hard to measure up. And because of where I went to school, a lot of people were achieving at big, high levels, famous people, and you're just like, why aren't we, you know, and he didn't know that he was basically saying, why aren't you doing that too? And it, so that was a weird, you know, thing to battle. And, but yeah, that was, CMU was a trip, because it wasn't Partyville, that's for sure.
No. So then when do you start partying?
Well, you still squeeze it in, but you got literally like Saturday night, and then you gotta fucking, you know, get your shit together. And, you know,
so when I met you, you were drinking, right? Or yeah, you drank?
I drank a lot, you know, in, not a lot, but like in high school we had access, because we had one of my best friends worked at a video store, and there was like a 20-something dude who was the store manager. So we had free videos, and he would buy us beer. So it was like, it wasn't even like that walking around town trying to steal beers out of people's garage. Like, we could just put an order in. We want Michelob this weekend. And then his mother, you know, we joke about the latchkey kids. Like, his mother had a yeah, divorce, and she was always down the shore on the weekend. So from like Friday, I'm staying at, you know, staying at Billy's, and, we could kick it for 48 hours of freedom, you know, and this guy was, you know, helpful, you know, for that. But so we, you know, we'd rock beers, but, you know, and in college.
Did you ever get into drugs?
No. I mean, I would once in a while get, you know, peer pressure and I'd take a hit on a joint. I didn't even smoke cigarettes. I think when you met
cocaine
me.
Cocaine or, yeah, when I met you were smoking,
yeah,
cigarettes.
Yeah, I was chain smoking. Like, I did all of this stuff after the
what
age.
About all the cocaine we talked about?
Yeah, that's, I never fucked with that. I did try it once in New York City, and that's a bad thing, because it had no visible effect except to sober you up. And then I started drinking. I could drink and keep drinking. I went to an after hours club, and I was, it was the first time I ran into a lady of the night. I was in an after, I was in an after hours club, and I was all gacked up on, and this is terrible, I'm saying it out loud. just one time experiment, family, but, this is brutal. But no, I, she comes up to the bar, really hot, African American,
of course,
yeah, and she's like,
your wheelhouse.
She's like, you want to buy me a drink? And, you know, like, that should be your debt. And she's like, I'll have a Jack and Coke, and it's after hours club, so they're like $14. And I say, I'll have one too. And then we go out. Like, you want to dance? So I'm like, I don't know, you know. So I'm rocking it, trying to show her moves, and I'm so inebriated that I fall on her, like we're grinding, and I, like, all of a sudden she's on the ground and I'm on top, and it's just like a shit show on the dance floor.
You fell on her.
Yeah. I just lost my balance, and I fucking, like, pancaked her. And
trying to show her the moves.
yeah, right. And this is kind of when I knew she wasn't, like, normal, because she didn't, like, kick and scream and say, get the fuck off. And she just, like, put her hands up and said, that's okay, get up. And she's like, get up. You're fine. She's like, if you want to talk to me, I'll be sitting over there. And there's this, like, sort of VIP couch area where there was this girl sitting there. I'm like, and, you know, anthropologically, like, that after hours thing might have been cool. It's fun to talk about. It's a good experience to have. It's kind of a New York thing. I guess there's clubs out here like that.
Oh,
but
yeah,
but it's seedy as shit, and that was a turn off. So I kind of I kind of governed myself with, like, I'm a beer drinker, and you can always, you know, and keep it square, and I like beer because it's social and you talk and bars and writers and actors, they're famous bar, you know, bar patrons, and weed and anything else really didn't really do it, you know, didn't take, thank God, you know. I mean, weed wouldn't have been a problem. I just never got off on it because probably by the time I tried it, I'd be half in the bag.
Yeah.
And it just didn't.
It ain't going to do shit for you if you're already fucked up on everything. And I mean,
like,
you
know? I'm so square. Like, I've never scored it one time in my life. Like,
scored it.
Is that what they call it?
I'll give you some today to make you, like, fucking, you know, officially, I mean, break that, I mean, streak. Your dad's big on streaks. Let's break that one.
I never copped. Is that another one? Like, I never copped.
Bought,
it.
Got, yeah, got. Yeah,
I never got. Like, and I just remember the old film canisters was, yeah, the way, right, people used to, yeah, keep. But, I, you know. It just wasn't for me. But then, you know, somehow I got, when I started smoking cigarettes, it was like, it was my own rebellion, but all it did was hurt me.
Yeah.
So I said, true. I've been, that's such, right, a goody two shoes my whole fucking life. I'm going to enjoy this little habit I got. And so bad, you know, and people were blown away when they saw me because I did it. I started after college.
Yeah. It's late to start smoking cigarettes.
And so then kind of quit that. But man, it was, you know, just, I don't know, just sell. But then I was so hyperactive also. And my buddy's like, I can't believe it's taken you this long to become a chain smoker, because
that's a, yeah,
I'm a knee bouncer. I'm like one of those guys.
Me too. I'm doing that. Yeah. I do it all the time.
So I needed some habits, but man.
What was your relationship like with your mom?
Well, that's interesting because we spent a lot of time together. And she, you know, she did everything, so I was spoiled that way to have, like, but it was kind of strict because she was the one who had to lay the rules down, and I was like, I always felt, I guess because I ran with some fucking juveniles, like, I had, like, curfew was ridiculous, like I was a chick, like, I felt like I would scream, like, I'm not, what am I gonna do, get knocked up, like, I just want to come home at 12,
that, right, yeah.
It was always like, I had to negotiate 15-minute increments and shit, and I'd have to bolt out.
What was your curfew?
Like 10:30. Then it got to 10:45.
We'll be over there later. We gotta get Carl home by 8.
nobody does the senior.
You're...
No, by the time I was a senior, I was hanging out in the city at strip clubs and drinking and stuff. But I blew the roof off it as a sophomore when I didn't come home till 6 in the morning. You know what I mean? But
so your curfew is 10:30.
I think my curfew was 11 by then at sophomore year.
And yeah, you blew it to, what did you do?
And this is where you get addicted to theater. I was doing a play. The first play in high school was, you know.
First of all, I love that you said addicted to theater. A lot of people would have been like, this is when I got addicted to drugs. This night right here.
Yeah. I'm doing sonnets and shit. Yeah. Jesus, what a corny fuck. Oh, God. This is not the Suge Knight story right here. Jesus Christ. Yeah, so I was in the senior musical as a sophomore, and I kept telling my best friend, I'm like, this girl's into me. Like, one of the hot, there's a scene for the hot box girls. It's like, why don't they just call them the pussy chicks? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're called the hot, anyway, and they dance and sing, and they're like little 1940s, like, Razzie girls or whatever. And I'm like, she's into me. And my brother, you know, and it's like that, it's like the 70s show. He's like, numbnuts. She's not, she doesn't even know you're fucking right, alive. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm just telling you what I'm getting, you know. And sure enough, like, it happened at the cast party on a pool table. I start making out with her. And I'm like, you know, it's out of body. Literally out of body. Because you're like, how the fuck did I pull this off? So I'm making out with her. And then, you know, another couple, like, let's go to the fucking high jump pit, you know, out by the fucking where they run track and shit. We're making out there in her Subaru. And you're not going to, you know.
Why'd you stay in the car?
No, we got out, but we were all over the place. But
the high,
like,
jump.
It just was ridiculous, and you're just slobbing her down, and she's fine, and I'm not going to say, I'm just going to take a fucking beating. I mean, I'm going home whenever the fuck this winds up, man. Yep. And it was like, you know, I was such a good kid that it was like the door just opened, like it opened before I got the key in, and they were in their robes, and they're just...
Oh, they're both...
My parents are just like, what the fuck, and... We'll talk about it. I got off the hook. We'll talk about it in the morning.
There's no calling your kid back
then
or texting. 6 a.m.
I mean, and you know, like 80s, it's like, you know, and today now, like, can you imagine today? It must be worse.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a fucking serial killer documentary every 10 right. seconds.
And also, you can text, and if you're not getting any response, oh, yeah, then that makes it even worse. That makes it worse.
Oh, right, right, right. Know? They're just in the dark for...
I've sent 10 texts. I'm not hearing anything.
I'm 6 hours over. Dude, 6 hours, you could be in fucking Missouri.
100%.
You know what I mean? Or you could be in the city.
I'm a hostage in Albuquerque, goddamn it. It's been 6 hours.
You know what I mean?
Send somebody.
The fugitive. It's like we could do the math. He's an average body. You know, you can figure the radius.
Wherever,
yeah. Yep. So they must have been shitting bricks, but I wasn't hammered. I was just, you know, basically like just love struck and all fucking fired up about my good luck. And I just remember the morning after is when I got the big, and I wasn't taking.
From dad or mom or both?
I think from my dad, but I was like, I literally was like, when is he going to understand that this is a fucking win? Like, I was not receiving any of the reprimand. I'm like, do you understand what I just did here?
Right.
If she's a senior, I'm sophomore. This shit is ridiculous. Yeah. You know what
like,
I'm
you
saying?
Should be high fiving.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, my hand should hurt.
And
right
he started
now.
Getting into, like, you know, senior girls, they're going to want stuff. And I'm like, yeah.
Was this
like,
your first talk?
Yeah. That's all I get. And I'm like, yeah, like sex, right? Like, I'm, this is what we're hoping for, but like
they're
he couldn't
want stuff. I hope so, goddamn.
He just couldn't get on board, and because we weren't, you know, we didn't have a. That was the generation gap too. Like I didn't get any. My brothers and sisters didn't get it either. So it's not like, and I don't know if you're, you know, you're not, you're a long ways away from that. So I'm sure that's still gonna ever and always be an awkward fucking thing. But
I'm talking to my daughter about it the whole way.
Yeah, I guess
I
you have to with the
to
daughter, but I guess you got to with
private.
Your son,
I would
too.
Do
yeah.
with a son, too. Yeah. I would. Hell, yeah. You don't want them out there getting everybody pranked.
Yeah,
either.
And I learned on the street, you know what I'm saying? I know that's the mean streets of New Jersey, but, like, I learned that, you know, like, literally, I don't know if I remember the day a neighbor's older brother said, you know what fuck means? And I'm like, what? And he's like, when you stick your fucking dick in your pussy.
All aggressive.
And I'm like,
oh, he's romantic. I'm journal about that. I remember one time I had a night like that too where my dad was coming to pick me up.
Oh,
I'm in 10th grade. And he said, I'm coming to get you at 11. I'm like, Dad, please. Midnight. He's like, Ryan, I got to go in tonight at 2 o'clock in the fucking morning.
Oh.
I'm getting you at 11. Be ready at 11. Not 11:01. Not 11:02. Be ready. And I was seeing this girl at the time. And they had a finished basement, as you do on the East Coast.
Yeah, not me, but everybody else.
Their daughter's bedroom was down there.
Oh,
no.
And
in like a little living room area. So she and I are down there. Parents are long asleep.
Fantastic.
And we're going at it. I'm a freshman, actually. Not a sophomore. I'm a freshman. Because she was the first girl I had sex with. I lost my virginity to her eventually. But this was all the...
Up until then.
Oh, man. And so she's...
The
you
rug
know, we're making out. She's, you know, she's we're getting hot and heavy. We haven't done anything yet. And I keep looking at that motherfucking clock. And it's 10:56. It's 10:57. And 11 o'clock hits. And
you
I'm
can't
like,
pump
my dad it. Said he's going to be here. I gotta get ready. And then 11 o'clock. And then I just hear, bah! He is in the driveway holding it
old,
down.
Like they were like
station wagon,
loud
bro.
As fuck.
Woke her parents up. Like I'm running out with blue. I had blue balls so bad on the ride home, dude. I was like, he's like, I told you.
It hurts.
11
like
o'clock.
You got kicked
right?
in the nuts,
oh,
right?
All up in your body's all, I told you, 11 o'clock. I'm like, you did not need to blow the horn. I was putting my fucking pants on. I'm running up, like, you know, you went out the basement door and they had a little hill, so I'm running up the grass hill, like, I'm waving at him, like, he's just
stop the horn. Oh, he didn't play.
Oh,
huh?
He didn't give a fuck
he
about
didn't
that
play.
And I would do the same thing today.
I guess you have to. I mean, but now it's like you should think of it like as a badge of honor, or like somebody gave a shit about you, like the you know, it's like you were the lucky one, like, because you know, there was shit going down in fucking the world. Like,
oh man,
I didn't know. Like, some of the little league dudes were diddling kids and shit. You know, and it's like,
yeah.
I was like, you know, you say, like, I didn't know that was happening, but they would like hang out and have candy bars after. And I'm like, well, why doesn't he want to kick it with me? And it's like, he knew that I was well parented and not
right,
a mark.
That's why.
And like, that would have fucking. And so all that stuff that made you feel like a herb or a nerd was the stuff that, you know, pays off and made you solid for the future, I guess. You know, I'm still waiting for that to pay off. But, you know, it's just that's the way it was.
But, do you want kids? Would you have kids?
I think that's, you know, past. That's past an option. And
for you?
I mean, I could, you know, theoretically, I don't know. I haven't thought about it until, I guess, even recently, because I guess I've been in that much of a basket case, and money's really important for that. And I know my folks, even though we're probably solidly middle class, we're strapped, you know, in college. And I just, you know, I think I'd be an okay dad. But
you'd be a great dad.
But
you'd worry about everything.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think that stuff is sort of goes cellular.
You have to let a little go, too.
Yeah,
I see myself doing that. Like,
that you worry her? Do you worry? Oh. Does she pick up on your worry?
I don't think she gets my worry until I tell her I'm worried about stuff. Crossing the street, strangers. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, she knows when I'm telling her legit shit. But, nah, I try to keep the stress in, anxiety in, and let it out in different ways, not around her, if I can help it.
Well, yeah, that's anxiety. Like, I heard a thing at a post office that I swear to God, I you know, there was a black guy at the end of the line in the post office, and a real kind of bitchy white woman came in, and she sort of cut the line, and he said, "Ma'am, you know, you're not at the end of the line." And she's like, "Oh, I'm sorry." And he did it really cool, and he wasn't mad. And then they struck up a friendship online because it was a mad ass long line. And then she said, "Hey, would you mind? I got to put the meter in. Would you hold my spot?" He's like, "No problem." So they like had this micro friendship. But during the conversation, he said, "Well, I'm glad you paid the meter, because, you know," he goes, "anxiety robs you of joy." And I heard that, and I was like, and then I talked to some hippy dippy friend, and they're like, "You know, that was not an accident that you heard that exact phrase." Yeah. And it didn't dawn on me, but I've been at auditions where the agent said, "You're a really nice guy, but when you get nervous, people don't trust nervous people, and you gotta
make them nervous."
You're like, yeah, and you have to find a way to get, and that's for stand up. When I thought my persona was this nervous neurotic, that just made it hard for people to laugh. It made it hard for me to enjoy doing it, and it's been an ongoing. I guess that's where, but anxiety just, it's like a,
well, I saw the shift in you too at the Ice House recently too, where you just let loose and had fun and you weren't stressing at all and just slayed.
Yeah. Well, I
look worried, and I know you. I've worked with you enough to know, right, when you're up there like
grinding the, yeah, thinking out loud. It went great. And I haven't done much since. You know, I'm rethinking that, you know, whether I can I don't know if I can. You know, I think Costa calls it a controlled anxiety attack stand up, you know, and
it's interesting.
But, you know, it's, you find out, like, why would you, if you're shy, why would you become an actor? You know, for me, it makes perfect sense. You pick the thing that's going to challenge you the most, or
right,
flip the personality the most, or because probably if in Russia, when they picked your aptitudes and shit like that, like I envy people who do like sculpting and shit like that. Just put me in a shop and I could just, but everything I do, went, you know,
I took my daughter to the Museum of Natural History a couple weekends ago, and they had the guys that were there.
Oh, with the fossils.
Yeah.
Shit?
Yeah, that, and I'm watching
just them.
The and
shit, right?
They're, and you're allowed to watch them. They're blocking out 20 fucking people staring at them, and they're just in the zone with that little thing.
Total zen down. Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, it was great. You'd be good at that?
I don't know. I'd have to probably have a degree in some kind of science.
Well, I mean, if you had the background. Yeah,
yeah, I think I would.
You could work patiently like that.
I do like tinkering.
I need to be around people. I can't. That would drive me nuts. Yeah. To not ever hear or talk or even ask someone a dumb question, you know.
Well, I think that's why I'm a hybrid personality. So I think I agree with you, but I do envy, because you can't bliss out when you do stand-up. You got to be totally concentrated. You can't bliss out when you're writing. You can get in the zone, but you still got to crank words. It's not like you go, when you paint, you can just throw paint. And I don't know. I just kind of envy those more instinctive arts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, unfortunately, we have something in common. Our dads have both
yeah,
passed.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk to you about that, because I know your dad was such a prominent role model, and hearing, I didn't even know that he drove like that after work,
yeah,
to come see a play. I mean, man.
Yeah.
Did they ever see you do stand-up, mom and dad?
Yeah, they saw him. That's the, for the Crab Feast
Florida?
Fans. That's Florida was the first. And
they
only
were there
yeah,
for that?
Yeah, and it was a fucking nightmare. And that's why it literally almost sunk me, man, because it was so bad.
Do you remember what they said to you after?
My mom said that you thought Bill Bellamy was handsome, but talked dirty, like, because he curses
nothing
a lot.
About you, though.
No.
Right.
I basically, when they saw me, because I stayed out, and then they went to sleep, and at breakfast, I was like, I walked out, like, don't fucking say shit to me.
You said your hands
up. I was just like, I can't fucking, it was a disaster, you know.
So if you haven't heard the episode, Carl... his brother works in Florida at a weather channel, correct?
No, regular news channel.
And while he's there working with Bill Bellamy, he has the opportunity to set up this incredible shoot with how many cameras?
He just had the one that he had for press conferences, yeah. But I had a live mic and he had ambient mics and shit.
just a bad set.
Yeah,
I ate it. All on video with everybody out there.
I've never seen it. And my brother's like, we can look at it. No, he's like, and he's like, I'll fatten it up
send
with labs.
Send that to us.
I got to.
You got to have
it. I'm going to ask him
that.
If he still has it.
Oh, come on. That exists?
I think it does, yeah.
I mean, still, I know they recorded that night, but that's still somewhere on a drive.
It's a 3/4-inch tape. I don't know.
You got to celebrate that.
Oh, yeah. Well, at least that I survived it. Yeah. But that was hard because, you know, my dad, one of the best memories I have is when
your mom is still alive.
Yes.
With
she's
us?
Doing great. She goes to the gym. She swims.
How old is she?
I think she's, she won't like me saying, but she's in the
in her
80th decade.
Wow. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. But she goes to the gym. I mean, she's in incredible shape, and she wants to go to the gym when I visit, and she gets a pass, and I'm like, yeah, I'm probably not going to manage, you know.
And she's going.
She goes. She swims 3 times a week. Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. And she reads. I got my reading Jones from her, my reading habit. She reads everything, and she's a hip lady. And yeah, but
how did your dad? When did your dad pass? And how did your dad?
He died in 2010, and he was. You know,
How old was he?
He was 82, but his brother, who recently just passed, my uncle, was 98. So
wow,
we were really, you know, as much as you can be. You know, people are such pricks on wheels. Like, I remember telling somebody, oh, I got to go home. My dad's sick with cancer. And the guy, I said, he was like, how old's your dad? I said, 82. And he goes, well, I'm like, really,
well,
dude?
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be glad about
right,
it?
Yeah. He made it to his 80s. Yeah. Fuck you, dude.
So... But yeah, he got a bad cancer. I think it was gallbladder. It was like only 20,000 people a year get it. It was really rare, and it swept through him pretty quick. And
man.
And it was a 4 to 6 month diagnosis, and it was about 6 months. So it was really weird because, you know, there's no good way for that to happen.
No.
So, but I had a bunch of time to get to him and see him, but I was, you know, 3,000 miles away. And wondering why the fuck I did it, you know, and that, you know, that's what the stakes were, you know, for leaving, you know, I'm sure you know, leaving a twin or leaving the East Coast. I mean, I know it's
everything.
Everybody's portable and but you know, it's easier to leave
now.
Yeah. But
no, we didn't have FaceTime.
I had $2,500 and I had a Honda Accord and that's still more than most people have in a fair shake in life.
Original
and,
rims on a Honda Accord.
Oh, that thing was beautiful. Yeah. Five speed. But, yeah, so, you know, I had to go back and forth. I had no money.
You did go?
Yeah, I went for 2 weeks, and, like, they had a hospital bed downstairs. And
in the house?
Yeah, and, you know, we tried to, like, you know, just be there. I was torn. Like, do I just pack up and move home? And he wouldn't let it go down like that. And
so can I ask you some questions?
Yeah.
So mind was there. He was able to communicate and talk to you about things like that. Like, don't do that. And
yeah.
He wasn't just...
I mean, you know, there's some moments where he was like, you know, he was just shaking. One time he very fiery guy. He had a bad temper sometimes. But, you know, I think I had... he just got something. I had a couple emails or something. He's like, don't let me fucking be anything comes up, don't fucking... I'm not the reason you're going to not go to that. Or he was so into it, you know, my dream. And so, you know... maybe had a latent performance Jones or some kind of, I don't want to say vicarious. I think he was just more trying to prop me up, but he just didn't want me to quit.
Great.
He just didn't want me to quit. And there was times where I was bottomed out and I had quit. Like, you know, you don't gain, you know, I joke about it. Like you don't gain 50 pounds unless you're playing Al Capone in the Untouchables.
And you're paid well.
Yeah. And I did that and I moved to the most vain place on earth and got fat and you know, I was not helping my cause, and you know, then he gets sick, and it's like, what the fuck did I do? with all this time away from them, because I would kick it in the city with them
so
all the
time. So you're going through the guilt of now I am getting to spend the time.
Yeah, and I'm sure my brother's sister did too. My brother's a doctor, so he had a real clinical way of dealing with it, and he got to look at some of the charts, and it was almost overlapped in his specialty. So, you know, he was carrying the burden of knowing that there was not going to be much of a chance of a recovery or even a year, or two, three, five. And so, you know, but he was also really, it was a blessing because he was like the authority on the scene, you know, but, you know, it was tough being, I was still running the World Cafe show. And I was just like, do I want to fucking give a shit about this when I got, you know, and you got some fucking dildo. He's like, how can you never put me up? I'm like, bro, I'm in New Jersey.
You lit me 2 minutes early last fucking time, Carl. Like,
yeah. You know, and it's just like, I need this
shit. New bit. Man.
Yeah. Yeah. I was
working on a late night set. You lit me 2 minutes early.
So yeah, that was a tough time, and I got in debt, and you know, you just feel real crummy. And then I started writing my book as a way to, I had to do something to make him proud before he went, I guess, is what my energy was.
Did you get the book out before?
No,
he passed?
I missed it, and that's sort of it may be a narrative device, and I may not have been consciously, but I was about 40,000-50,000 words in, before he died, and I was kept him, giving him word counts. Hey, I'm up to 20,000 words, Dad. I'm
did really... he look at any of it? Did he...
No. But he had, you know, a memoir that he was hoping to write, and he had these files, and he let me look at them, and then I had this notion I'd write a father son book, but it just wasn't there. That what his narratives were, and maybe someday. But you know, and he became a poet. You know, that's the cool thing about my dad is, like, he was kind of macho sports guy and a poet, you know, and I love guys like that. And it's, I think that's a throwback. I hope to be a guy like that. But he wrote a book of poetry before he died and published it. And he was a famous, like, he was a poet. They called him the poet laureate of Rutherford, New Jersey, because he was like even at his age, he was the best poet in the whole room. And people get up there and read about their fucking vaginas and, you know, masturbating. He'd get up there and do like these Robert Frost type of, he didn't rhyme. I guess it's called free verse, but so he was into it, and you know, I didn't handle it particularly well. I was a fucking wreck.
The death or him dying?
All of it, you know, all of it, because it felt like I didn't get shit done. You know, every NFL player, I'm by mama house. They didn't need that, but you know, I didn't think I was blowing smoke up my own ass. I don't think he was. I had some, like, early success, early prompt. Like, it wasn't like I was barking up the wrong tree. And, like, for many years, he was just as frustrated as I was. You know,
Well, I can tell you as a parent that all I want for my daughter is happiness.
Yeah.
So if that means she wants to go into fucking horticulture, or she wants to do stand-up, I mean, I'd be real with her about stand-up.
Yeah.
I would tell her the truth. But I would support whatever it is.
Yeah.
I wouldn't care.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
So it didn't matter to your dad whether he held that book in his hand or not. He knew what his son was out there doing. You're giving him an update on it. He had been there. He's already published.
Right.
So, I don't know, man. It just sounds like...
Yeah, I mean, it's part of a self-dramatical, you know, and it's a catchy name, maybe, the drama. But it's really that I learned somewhere along the line that I was performing my life as opposed to, like, living it. And when you're not getting... When you're not... Stand-up kind of saved me because I was performing and I was getting fatigue from the exhaustion of, you know, doing stand up. So I wouldn't need to, like, do karaoke. I wouldn't need to be the center of attention. I wasn't bouncing off the walls as much. You know, I needed to conserve energy for performance, and it dawned on me that I didn't need to make my life, you know, dramatic or critical. And then when you get hit with a real emotions that are, you know, I mean, I would start crying in a fucking subway, and I didn't give three fucks about
it. Nope.
Didn't give three fucks about it.
Let me tell you something.
Like, bawling snot coming out. You know, my girlfriend would be like, she was the best. She shepherded me through it. She came home with me, made pancakes for him. You know, even he's like, you got any testers? My dad's like, you got any testers? You need those. He had diabetes too, so he wasn't supposed to be eating that shit. But at that point, so she was making, you know, and so, you know, he's a funny guy. But, you know, because he was a poet and a writer, there was a very fucked up thing when you know the end is near that. It was, you know, and what my mom had to do, because we were only there sporadically. She was there. I didn't know they had to call the EMTs a couple times because he slipped in the bath. Like, just shit you didn't want to hear about. And
It's your hero is becoming weak and frail and sad and broken. And,
So, you know, you didn't. I can't imagine, you know, if you lost your dad at what, 16? I can't imagine not having had him all that time.
30 years later, I'll be 46 in March. I don't mind saying my age. I'm still here. My dad died at 42. So that was a big moment for me.
Yeah, that's huge. Well, that weird, birthday was scary.
43
for you,
was, well, that was when I had all those crazy health issues in 2016.
Oh, God. I didn't.
I found out I have this blood disease and that this clotting and everything is actually probably how my father really died, from clots, not a heart attack like they thought back then. Like,
no,
it
clots
came
are bad.
Full circle. And they were saying that with all the technology these days, they're able to diagnose clots, where back then, late 80s, if you died in your 40s, they just said heart attack.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know. And they're saying now that we're learning more and more, and equipment is where it is, we're thinking that we've misdiagnosed those people.
Shit. Yeah.
And those people probably had a clot that took them out, not an actual heart attack.
Yeah, pulmonary
embolism. So I, there'll be times I'll be in the grocery store and some bullshit song will come on and I'll be like,
oh, it's so easy.
I just want to grab a frozen motherfucking pizza. And I'm just like,
oh, yeah.
It'll get you when you least expect it.
Yeah, well,
but then I laugh about it because I feel like, you know, it's just like one of those things where, like, my dad would laugh about that.
Yeah.
He was standing next to me, like, look at you fucking crying right now.
Yeah, that's true. And my dad was in my act early on. Like, he was always screaming and yelling and shit. And then, you know, he was like, use me. He's like, I don't care if you make me out to be the biggest piece of shit.
That's how he said. He just wanted to be in something.
Yeah, he just wanted it. If it was going to be fodder or grist for the mill, he was all for it. And, you know, I just, you know, I guess the fucking, I wish we had a better time. You know, there was no need to be so fucking flipped out all the time.
Scared all the time of nothing.
And worried about your career. And
I read once, too. I want to say it was something like 80% of the things we worry about don't end up even coming to fruition. And you think about it. I don't know what that number is.
Right, right.
But I feel like it's more often than not you worry about something like, oh, that fucking took care of itself. Didn't even need to really spend time on it.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
Yeah, but if you're also but how do you feel productive without you know,
so
fucking punching walls or, you know, banging your head against the wall, like, to me seemed productive, you know.
Were you able to say goodbye? Were you there?
Yeah, I mean, I made it by the fucking I made it by a hair, because
that day you made it in, or
so
are you comfortable talking
about this? I guess now I am. I wasn't, like I said, it took me 2 years to be able to even say my dad passed away
without getting choked
just
up,
just losing it.
Yeah.
And people, like, I remember seeing it. I won't name it.
I was at
the Improv one night and I hadn't seen a certain comic in a while, and she's really good. the friends in comedy are different than maybe like friends, but she was a good friend in comedy. And she's like, what have you been doing? And I was like, oh, my father, I'm so sorry. And she said, when? And I was like, about 2.5 years. She goes, like, she looked like get over.
Right.
But I was a fucking wreck for a while. But the saddest thing is that he was a lucky man.
Sorry.
He was lucky that he got to be home. Like, he went in the hospital and then they stabilized him enough to get him home. And
this kept him comfortable.
Yeah. And then the hospice thing, and I had to fly, you know, home. Everybody in my family was there, and I was the last one, you know, because of just means and how far and what I had to do for work. And I just, like, I have to go. My brother's like, you gotta come and get a ticket tomorrow. And so I got, you know, one way, and got picked up at the airport, and he couldn't talk. You know, you have that fucking movies give you this fantasy that you know, they could be like, here's my parting fucking word of wisdom, or, you know. And he wasn't verbal, and it was amazing because I got to his bedside and I got to hold his hand and he squeezed it and his eyes lit up, and, you know, I got that moment, and we all did, and we were there. He stayed one more day. You know, we were playing John. He liked John Denver, this fucking guy. Loved.
Thank God I'm a country boy, man. I love John Denver.
This Italian guy from New Haven, Connecticut, loves fucking John Denver.
Seventh inning stretch. Man.
So the hospice nurse said, you know, play all his favorite music. We're playing that. Benny Goodman. You know, he liked Roy Orbison. And my sister was reading his poems to him. It was wild to have a night, like a day with him, but he was, you know, incapacitated. And then we were there when he took his last breath. That's an amazing, lucky guy. And, you know, it's the first time I ever said that I'm really glad that it was a blessing. I was inconsolable for many months. And like, you know, I was in the Catholic Church, they don't let lay people speak. And I was really pissed off about that because you also, as a comic, writer, actor.
Wait, they didn't let you get up and speak? Wow. Well, my grandma, now I didn't speak when my grandmother died. I couldn't believe what we went through. Like,
oh, you must have dropped been dead in total, front of us. Really?
I gave her mouth to mouth the whole nine, took her out. I shouldn't say she dropped dead in front of us. She was alive. She died on the way to the hospital. Oh. But I remember my cousin really wanted to get up, my cousin Anita, and say some things, and they let her.
I don't know, just maybe our parish or whatever, but to be honest with you, and I even wrote about it, like, I'm a professional, I'd be famous, but I'm a professional public speaker, and I wouldn't have been able to get through fucking 8 seconds. I was a fucking sobbing shitbag mess, and you know, only because it is something you're growing up as a boy not to, like, I guess... I don't know. I've changed my attitude about it. When I see people cry, dudes cry, I'm like, you got heart if you can cry.
Yeah.
And it hurts in proportion to how much you love somebody. So
people that think apologies are weakness or crying is a weakness. Let me tell you something. It may be a weak moment.
Yeah.
It may be a weak moment, but that moment, all you're doing is building a foundation of strength.
Yeah.
And if you can keep moving forward, I'll tell you this. This is, I don't know if I've ever even said this. I probably have on the Crab Feast, but my grandmother came out of her bedroom. Her last words were, "Somebody help me." Oh. She goes face first on the floor. I mean, arms to the side, no pun intended, dead weight, you know, just all weight. Straight down on her nose. So my brother, I'm already on 911. He runs up to the top of the stairs. He's freaking out. He doesn't know what to do. I tell the lady, I didn't know that, because when you call 911, my dad had been dead for a while, so they won't send an ambulance. They send a coroner to come get the body. She's still alive. She's having,
wow.
Now, she was having a massive heart attack. And, you know, I'm in lifeguard class. I just became a lifeguard at the Y at the time. So I'm certified in CPR and mouth to mouth, all of it. And I tell I didn't know, the lady's like, you need to stay on the phone until they get there. So I switch with my brother and I go up and I'm giving my grandma mouth to mouth. And it's just like, you don't ever want to fucking have to do that in your life.
Fuck, yeah, no.
And her nose is as black as your shirt.
She fell and broke it.
Her teeth broke out of her mouth. I'm going to be fucking straight up with you. And they come in, they get her down the stairs, they rip her shirt open. You're seeing all that. That's your grandmom. They put the paddles on. And even prior to that, I always hated the paddles. That lifeless jelly that rolls after they shock you always has freaked me out.
Oh.
And they're not gentle. They come in, and rightfully so. They throw your furniture out of the way to clear an area to work on somebody.
Yeah, they're not there to fucking be dangerous.
It's not fucking Hollywood. And they hit her with the paddles, and they're giving her oxygen, and her color starts to come back. And I'm telling you, I could see her. She was gasping for air, and I'm talking to her the whole time. And she's just looking right through me. Her eyes are glassed over, and she's just piercing right through me, and she would just go, like that. And I'm like, okay. And I'm trying to count. Okay, it's every 8 seconds. So when they came in, they
every
were like,
8 seconds is
I'm like
when,
she's gasping
when you have a,
every 8 seconds.
That's oxygen count?
Yeah. And they had her down to 6 and 4. So she was doing better on the way out the door. My brother goes with her in the ambulance. I have to stay back to give, you have to give a police report. And not only that, you have to put your home back together. It's not TV.
Right, because this is all their debris is there.
Shit's
they don't
everywhere.
They leave packaging and shit.
And I go to the top of the stairs, and I'm bawling, and my grandmom's teeth are in the fucking carpet.
God, man.
And I kept her place immaculately clean, and I would hear those little bits of teeth in the vacuum for about a month or so when I would clean up. You could hear them.
Just rattling.
They just got buried in the fucking carpet. There would just be these little pieces. And that moment when I went up, I was bawling and I'm a zombie and I'm picking my grandmother's teeth out of the fucking carpet of her house. And right there on the wall is a picture of Jesus.
Uh-huh.
And it's tilted. That picture was never tilted.
Yeah, there's stuff like that.
I don't know if the fall, whatever, the thing's fucking tilted. And I think back in my mind and I see where I'm positioned, and I think that she was looking at that picture. That's what she was looking at on her way out.
Wow.
And also, I think that I was blocking it.
You're doing your compressions and shit. Annie, are you okay?
And she's trying to fucking look. Just let me see Jesus, right? Jesus probably trying to turn to see her like, oh Carrie, I'm coming, Carmella. Oh.
That's fucking brilliant.
I really do
observed.
Believe they were trying to fucking communicate. And my fat head's in there like, and one, and two. And, you know, they tell you to go to the beat of staying alive. So I'm doing that. I'm like,
are you kidding? Italian Bee Gees are the fucking life beat. Italians love the Bee Gees.
And I'm going, I'm trying to do staying alive to somebody
on her
dying.
Chest. Whoa, and it's someone and you
Jesus is trying to see her, and she's trying to see Jesus, man.
Wow.
And then we go to the hospital. And I don't know why this nurse said this way. I think I don't know if they called somebody or what, but they said her boys should go back first. Well, my uncle's there. That's her boy. My right, dad's already right. dead.
Wow.
And they meant me and my brothers, Derek and Todd. And we were living with her at the time, just Derek and I were. And we go in, and man, they don't clean it up. You uh-huh. know, like, she's on a table. She's got a fucking sheet over her head's out, but they got that fucking tube in her throat. So I'm like, you guys can't even pull that fucking thing out. Oh. I'm just looking at our dead grandmother on this thing, and my brothers are looking at me like, what should we do? And I was like, we should thank her. And we stood there. It chokes me up to talk about it. And just, you know, thanked her out loud for everything
yeah.
this woman had not only done for us, but you gave us our father, you know?
Wow.
So it was just this moment of, like, it's never that pretty. Even when those people are breaking down in the hospital and shit, it's all pristine and it's like you said, it's this, oh, here's my last word. No.
Yeah, it's the Westerns that. Where they, like, tell my wife.
Yeah,
it's like, it's
never
tell
that. My wife. Ain't, no, it ain't
that. And I think that does a disservice because it's, I don't know. Wow, that's a heavy story, man. That just brings back, you know, so many, but, you know. It's, you know, it, I maybe for a while I also held on to I'm younger and this shouldn't be happening at this stage in my life. And but you had it so much earlier and so much
and often. That was the thing. It came early and often.
Yeah.
Quick. I mean, by the time I'm 20.
God, that's
I've lost my father, my mom's left the family, though. So she's gone.
Okay. I didn't even know. But, I thought she wasn't with us. But
no, but dad. Dead grandma dies now.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I have friends that the grandma, she was became a parent, right?
She unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
That was different too. My grandmother's house was always a special place. The smell of garlic and sauce always permeating.
Oh, that's yeah,
the
it's your Italian
place.
Side?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And once you start living there, you don't smell that anymore. You know what I'm uh-huh. saying? You're there now and you're used to it, and it's not that. So that was always a big shame to me. And people would ask me, like, what was it like? And I said, the biggest shame to me of living with my grandmother was it wasn't my grandmom's. I wasn't going to my grandmom's house anymore. Now I'm going home.
Uh-huh.
And there's just something it special just about going to your grandmom's house,
yeah.
you know? And as she would say, I love you to come and I love you to go.
But what were you ashamed of? Just that it became commonplace?
I wasn't
you
ashamed of it. It was just, that was the hardest thing,
yeah.
was losing that specialness.
Yeah,
does
yeah,
that make
yeah.
sense?
Yeah, of course.
That feeling of this special place, but now it's every day I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel That's special the, anymore.
Right.
And there's every goddamn day reminder why I'm living in this fucking house. And poor her son's dead. So
yeah, she's
crying
all the time. You're not
supposed
to, live through that.
No.
Yeah.
And God. we'd make jokes about
it. And
it
probably
all
stressed
time.
Her out. Like,
all the time.
The health
and where
issues.
We're driving and like where are you kids going?
Yeah,
you
God
know,
forbid
always,
you hyper
right,
protective of you guys. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or you and she would always say, oh, I miss my son.
Oh, that stuff is unbearable.
Hun, do you want some cheese? Like, I mean, in and out of that shit like that, man. I'm gonna make some sauce. I'm like, yo, you dealing with it? Like we all were dealing
Yeah, well,
with it.
We get that. My mom gets those not very emotional, but like, you know, the movies, you know, the crying at the, you
oh,
can just
yeah.
hear, and everybody's staring straight ahead, no one will look at each other, and you just hear you just hear like, oh, there she's going. And so you got to pick your movies wisely when you get Netflix at the house. And but it used to happen when, you know, when I was little, it's these bursts of emotion because I don't know. You got to open that up because it stuff is it shouldn't be so embarrassing and it shouldn't be
it's just
so hard to say you care and you love somebody and you know and that so was that, the pushy guy.
You're waiting for that point too, like, and you're lucky you got to.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't get to say a damn thing to my father. I didn't get to ask him questions.
Right.
I would have loved, as a father, I would have loved to have been like, how the fuck did you deal with twins?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? In 1973, two of these fucking things at the exact same time.
Oh, my God.
I would have worked my ass off, too, to be honest with you. Be out of
that. Yeah, well, there's the thank God it's Monday phenomenon, right, where people, guys can't wait to get the fuck back to the office, you know?
So I want to go back to some other things, too, as far as, like, how this has affected you. You said you got kicked out of college? Out of Carnegie Mellon?
Yeah.
You did?
This is funny. I used to not tell stories that were in the book because I didn't want to spoil it. Like, anybody's buying the fucking thing.
Available on Amazon.
Yeah, no, me. But...
in, but wait, so...
it's a very intense conservatory culture, which I know, like, compared to, you know, the military academies is... pussy shit, but it's very intense. So every year you're reevaluated whether you belong in this program or not
by a board,
by the faculty, and okay. You have these things called juries where you go in and you sit down with the faculty and they review your work and they say, okay, well, we'll see you next year. So I got through that freshman year, and then sophomore year, and there's also a lot of things that were holdovers from like the 80s, 70s and 80s, Carnegie Mellon and a bunch of other schools were in a thing called the League of Consortium Theater Program. So there were like these, whatever, this sort of thing that existed, and they all presented in New York. And so, you want to go to a league school. And that kind of fractured. And so Carnegie Mellon was just kind of on its own. But the old ways of, like, basically it's called, you get cut. So you're living in fear of the cut. And right. You start with 40 students. And we wound up, the happy ending is we graduated 13, so like, and they audition.
That's it.
Yeah,
are you or one of
16,
the 13?
16 or something? Yeah, I was one of the 13, so I made it through. But I did get that thing that, and this is an example of fear being a crippler. So I had a rough time freshman year adjusting to the rigor a little bit. But I'd done a lot of theater in the summer and a lot of so I was always anticipating the desired results of these exercises. They didn't let you perform until you were a junior and a senior, so you were always doing shit in the classroom to break habits, and it's just very intense. It was six, 12-hour days just on the schedule, and then you had to do crew at night for the shows that were up, and you would learn set building and all this shit. So you're getting stressed out. I got mono my freshman year, and I thought I was clinically depressed because I would sleep through everything, or I was narcoleptic, and it turned out I had mono and didn't know until I went to the infirmary, and they say, well, you're getting over it. And then sophomore year came around and I was pretty sure I wasn't going to get cut freshman year. And, then you become really tight and you become like, you can just imagine a young Carl Dia, my crew, it was all my people, it really intense feelings of you're performing. You have to do a lot of we would do this as a groups, talk about shit. It's not normal fucking college, but, sophomore year I got involved with some, I started, dating a couple of women, and I guess I took my eye off the ball, and but I thought I was performing well, and we had a big final showcase, and I kicked ass. I had a senior year girlfriend at the time, and she's like, everybody in the class is like, you were the best one up there, and they're all mocking her because she was like cradle robbing, and also, but he was like the hot actor in the class, whatever. This is all anecdotal and unprovable, but that's what was happening. And then my sophomore year jury came up, or whatever they call it, and you remember going in the office and the secretary dude is there, and he knows this was like shitty afterward, like he knew I was going in to get my head lopped off, and he was like, hey, can I see you? And you have to, I was going to the airport, people were going to the airport, it was like right after the school year, and they sat you down and they basically came up with this mumbo jumbo, and you're just waiting to hear, we'll see you next year. And I had to go do summer stock that year, and they said, we don't think you should continue in this program. And I was like, oh, okay. And they maybe threw a few cents in about why, and some of the teachers I thought were allies started going with the company line. And then I walked out like glass-eyed. I walked by, everybody was waiting for their conference. I guess it's more called a conference, but. And I walked out the back of the building, and my buddy came up to me, and he's like, "What happened? What happened? You okay?" And I'm like, "I'm not okay." And I said, they cut me. And he's like, "What?" And he fucking kicked it. Like, he was more pissed off than I was.
Yeah.
And I fell apart. You know, this is so sad now, but, like, it's so intense, the sort of indoctrination that you can't. And you put in 2 years, and these credits ain't transferring fucking nowhere.
So when they say sword wielding
is not going to, you're not going to be able to go to fucking Rutgers and get an engineering degree. So you're going to.
I got an AA in sword wielding, motherfucker. You tell me these credits.
Yeah, yeah.
These 62 ain't carrying over.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say out of the program, it's the whole college. It's not just this program at Carnegie Mellon.
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, I sent two applications. I did the drama one and like a general. I guess I might have done. I got into both schools in case I didn't get into drama, but. Yeah, I think you're basically done as a student. You might have been able to transfer into English
sword
department.
Sword wielding.
But, the sort of middle class irony of the whole thing was the reason I had to fly out the next day was to go to my brother's medical school graduation. So I just got my ass kicked out of college, and I'm like, this is just a terrible, and I was not telling anybody for like 3 or 4 days.
No.
I was just sitting around in a funk. But
how'd you get back in?
Well, my dad came to the rescue. He got on his gray fucking suit and he flew out. Everybody flew to Pittsburgh.
Everybody, your mom, dad.
I think everybody. Yeah, everybody
to
did.
Rally.
No, we were in North Carolina. We were all there anyway, so we had like a meeting. And then my dad said, "I'm coming to Pittsburgh and I'm going to talk to the fucking head of the department and see what's going on." And he pled my case, which is kind of just concerned parent wasn't going to help my cause because he wasn't there. He didn't know it.
Damn, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That kind of support.
You know, and then all my friends in college were, you know, they I didn't know this at the time, but the guy, and it's a guy I wish I would talk to. I owe him a debt of gratitude, but they did a petition. And the last guys who had the last conference of the day said, "We have a petition," and he said, "Before we talk about me, we want to talk about Carl, and this can't stand." And it all kind of, there was an article, this is so nerdy, but the theater, I think it was Theater Week, theater magazines, and they had an article in 84 or something, 85, and it was called Black Monday, and it was about all these schools with these draconian fucking kick people out, and it was the day the article was about. It happens on a Monday, and people getting 1 year at CMU, they were the students were so pissed at the person they kicked out that they threw red paint on the fucking call board to like protest it, and they were talking about doing that, and everybody was like, "Don't do it for Carl, Or you know, I was like, "Do it," you know, like I want to fucking
come
blood
on,
back.
Hey, I got a shit, I need paint. I need hold on fucking, to that red paint,
yeah. So that didn't go down, but you know, the guy had the balls to go in there and say, "I don't want to talk about me. I want to talk about Carl." And so I had that kind of working for me, and then I flew back to Pittsburgh to like pack up the house. Or I had a meeting with I had a teacher who was in my corner and would let me vent. And I'm like, "Bro, I'm you know in my ego mind, I'm like, I'm dope. Like, how the fuck am I the guy?" And he was explaining how it blah blah blah. And then I wrote this letter that I only have parts of it, and I wish I had. But like I wrote like a 10-page letter that was talking about where I was blocked, how I was, you know, just bearing my soul, telling them that these relationships were a distraction, and that, you know, everything you say is kind of right, but I want to fix it here. And then I had to go do fucking summer stock for $25 a week in a fucking barn.
What is that? What is summer stock?
Summer stock. It's like
what really is
the
it?
Joke is summer stock is a work camp set to music, right?
Right.
So, you during the day you rehearse the play, and then at night you do the other play. Like at first you just rehearse one play, you put the play up, and then at night you perform the play, and then the next day you're rehearsing the next play, and you do like 6 plays in 3 months.
Okay,
and they're all the musicals from so you have to rehearse in a week. It's
because everybody's got a summer stock. I feel like I hear it so often.
Yeah, I don't know to the degree that it's.
But you're just ripping and running plays.
Yeah, and I wasn't particularly a musical person. It was classic. I was butchering the choreography, and it was just fucking hilarious.
You butchered it with the hooker, man.
Yeah, I fell on people. But like my reaction was always fuck, like, and I'd be in the middle of trying to do Anything Goes, and I'd be cursing and shit, but. And so while I was there, I still was not in, I was in limbo with my appeal to get back into school. So I'm doing these bullshit plays. Everybody's, you know, I was just so out of that. And, you know, still trying to like connect with the girl who was breaking up with me and, you know, and, I didn't know I was going to get back into school or if I, you know, how I was going to face the world. I got like a fucking psychosomatic diarrhea. Like it was, you know, in my myopic world, my little bullshit theater college world, like it was like being excommunicated,
right?
You know,
yeah.
And then I eventually a letter showed up, and you know, this is old school, like there was only one phone, pay phone in the house at the Summersock Theater, and I'd sit in the fucking phone booth and I'd check in if I got any mail. And eventually I got mail, and they said they're gonna, on a probationary, they're gonna take me back and on a probationary thing. And then I had junior year to sort of get my shit together. And then it all just sort of came together, you know. But
did your dad come to graduation?
Oh, yeah. And then he came to every play that I did. And my mom came out. Everybody came out. And then, you know, my dad was like, you know, this motherfucker was dragged to all your graduations. He basically said, you're going to be there.
Yeah.
And that was great. And it was the first time that I was the graduate instead of like looking up to these. I mean, my brother went to fucking Duke, so like, you know, that was he was a big, and he became a doctor, so you know, and they were all good schools, and so you know, but you know, CMU with that conservatory, the drama thing, it felt a little, you know, felt as special, you know, and that was a big day, but it was you know, I got kicked, I experienced the drop, getting kicked out, but I didn't lose any time because people have had to come back and, you know, take a 5-year plan, and it all worked out. But you know, you lived in mortal fear of getting cut, or at least I did. And the smart people didn't give a shit.
But that sounds like most of your life you've lived in that kind
of, yeah, that
fear,
sort
of
self-fulfilling prophecy. And
so,
not...
you're a successful professional stand-up comedian. You're a successful published author.
Yeah,
you're a thespian.
Yeah,
a graduate of, yeah, of an a very prestigious school.
Yeah.
CMU, Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. Where are you now? How do you feel about your anxiety? Like, what are you doing to deal with it? And do you think you're better now than you were then? And
yeah, I'm much better now. You know, but I have to practice, and that appeals to me, the word practice as opposed to self-help. Or I go to therapy, which is, you know,
you still go?
Yeah, I go on a, you know, it's not as a, I went right before my dad got that you got to come home. I went to see this therapist because I was struggling back then just in general. And I basically just talked about my dad dying, and I just needed a urgent visit. And the guy said, if you want to talk when you get back, I understand. And I didn't go back for years. And then I started like 5-6 years ago with the same guy. He's fantastic.
You go weekly?
Or? I was going every week, but it's expensive because I go out of pocket because I'm so neurotic about losing my fucking rights to buy like a gun or something.
You can't get one?
I don't know. You never know. If they say it's a mental health issue.
Sure, then there you go.
I don't even want to be in the same room as a gun, but I'm just saying, I don't want the stigma to be diagnosed. So I pay out of pocket, and now I'm speaking to the Honeydew crowd. But one thing I do, and this is so... I'm not going to give it the qualifier because that takes the wind out of it. I write down every day minimally 3 things I'm grateful for.
Larson introduced me to a book, and I can't remember it now, and I want you to know, and somebody out there will probably say, but it starts off with that. 3 things I'm happy for, and you write those down.
Yeah.
And then 3 things throughout the day. And then in the evening, you get a little critical, like, well, I could have, you know, and it's not a beat yourself up,
right,
but it's like, I could have eaten.
Yeah,
better.
That's probably.
Today.
I
could have been
that.
A little more positive.
Yeah, yeah.
I have the book at home. I've done 2 of them, and it really did help. It helped because it just changes your mind. Because once you start writing positivity, you start seeing the positive.
Yeah, it does flip your brain.
Absolutely, and it works. And
I literally just write down in my day planner, and half the time it's sleep. Good sleep, because that's going to be, you know.
That's a big one for me too.
You know, but like if you're having a bad, even if you're having a bad day, and you write down Cheez-Its, I've written down Cheez-Its, right? And that may seem like, in my old brain, I'd be like, what a loser! Like you're happy for fucking Cheez-Its. I'm like, you know what? That's still a great fucking day by worldwide standards.
That's what I'm saying.
And a fucking Cheez-It is dope as shit. and it's tasty. And I got a day to sit down and bust.
You ever
want
to come over for some cheese? I got that family pack.
Oh,
believe me.
So that, like, you know, that's how you're not having, even on your worst day, you still got something to say went right.
Right.
And I was the opposite. I got titties in my face and I'm like, this is bullshit. You know,
that guy's like, you need to shut the fuck up quickly. Yeah, that's when. So after that crazy health stuff, which I'm going back to now because my dad died at 42, I made it to 43. And that was weird. It was weird.
You're like Mickey Mantle.
It was weird to walk on this planet and know that
I'm older than my father
ever was.
Yeah.
And I don't but I still feel like his son.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
It's a weird thing. It was a weird thing to deal with. And it is still. Every year I get older, I'm like, I just driving the other day, I'm like, God, my dad was never this age. There's 3 years of shit I have done.
Yeah, he never had. Did he need readers before he went? Like, he praised his eyesight was good by the time. You know what I mean?
He was good. He was good. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's an amazing perspective to have.
Well, you're amazing, and I can't thank you enough for coming on here.
Oh, thanks,
and opening
man. It sounds like a therapy session.
Well, that's what this is, man. A little bit of everything. A little bit of laughter, and we find light in the darkness. And, you know, I can tell just from knowing you, you've come such a long way, and I'm proud of you that you go to therapy. And
thanks.
Because, yeah, a lot of guys beat them. That was one of the things I learned, too, going to therapy. The ladies would tell me, like, not a lot of you guys will come in here. It's a lot of ego, and my machismo won't allow them to be in here and open up. And I'm like, fuck that shit.
It's just it's a luxury, but I wish more people could do it.
And podcasting and stand-up certainly have been therapeutic over the years. And I'm very grateful for you and for you coming on. And we got more to talk about, and you know you're going to be a repeat guest.
I hope
on
so, man. I really appreciate it. And to be honest with you, your friendship has pulled me through because, you know, that's what we're here to do is to connect. And so, you know, being better, more present for you as a friend is actually part of what helps me, you know, keep my shit together. So thank you.
Well, I'm thankful and grateful for you, brother. So please, one more time, will you promote whatever you'd like?
Yeah, just pick up the Drama King on Amazon. I, Carl DiGregorio, on social, dgregorgeous.com. And apparently I'm going to be on the third season of Room 104. They shot two seasons and stacked them. So I thought I was going to be in season two, but season three is coming up. So
all right,
keep you posted.
Well, thank you again. You are always welcome. I love you. Appreciate you opening up. I am Ryan Sickler on social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next Wednesday.